This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
And good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. It is great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. It is a beautiful day in Chicagoland as the heat wave begins to move in. High of 90 degrees today, then we'll be up right about 100 throughout most of the rest of the week. Sunday starts to cool off again, but a lot of heat in between. Right now, 87 at O'Hare and Midway, 82 degrees along Chicago's lakefront.
And we coming up today, we'll talk about the housing market, the fall of housing starts, and why some foreign buyers are not signing deals. We buy used cars, so why not used airplanes? That is what United is doing. And the noon business hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Chicago-based United Airlines is having to come up with ways to cover the absence of grounded Boeing 737 MAX jets. We'll discuss that in our next segment. Right now, the report on housing starts leads today's data. While there's a Chinese impact on the home sales in the U.S., we are joined by Chris Lowe, chief economist of at FTN Financial. And Chris, thanks for joining us. First question, are home builders, finding that buyers are not that interested in new homes, or are there other issues that home builders are encountering on their side of the business?
It's weak demand for sure. Although in some markets, New York, for example, the builders talk about overbuilding, of course, by other developers, not by them. But it is weak demand, and in, we're seeing much fewer, like a 30% drop in foreign buyers, and that's a big part of it. It's not just because there's this tension between the U.S. and China, but it's also new rules the Treasury Department put in place last year that foreign buyers in certain cities have to show proof if they're buying an apartment more than $5 million. They have to show how they earned the money they're going to use to pay for it. And that's put a real chill on sales.
And you in New York City are seeing this firsthand, correct?
That's right. There was an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal, in fact, about major property developers, about half a dozen of them already seeking emergency loans, bridge loans, or if they can't get them, then entering bankruptcy protection. And it really is, we're swimming in ultra-luxury apartments here, huge supply. There are fewer affordable housing units on the market, and that part of the market is holding up okay.
So let's talk about U.S.-China trade. Seems like we're getting something new every day, sort of back and forth. The trade deal is close. No, it's going to be a long way off. Now it looks like China may be more hard line on this. What do you expect here?
Yeah, that seems to be the way they're going. And it's interesting that Chinese officials, even when Kudlow a couple of weeks ago came out and said we're 90% there, the South China Morning Post was quoted a Chinese official saying a deal is very unlikely. I think at this point they've decided that they just cannot give up control of their domestic economy. And that's one of the conditions. Essentially, what we're asking for is protection of U.S. intellectual property for companies that are doing business in China. And that would require an overhaul of the Chinese legal system. And that's not something they're willing to do. I think also there's probably some thought being given to whether, perhaps Trump will make a deal that's not entirely what he wants in order to get a deal before the election, or if not, maybe they can negotiate with someone else if he doesn't win the election. And China's always had this sort of long view approach anyway, so it's consistent for them to wait and see what happens.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks for being with us. Coming up, United Airlines getting creative in solving a plane problem. United Airlines having to find new ways to maintain passenger capacity due to the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX. To talk about it, we welcome Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Joe, United is going to begin using used planes. actually purchasing some of them. Is that right?
That's right. They're making some big moves today, and I think Wall Street's applauding this, and it's in a way a breath of fresh air instead of just living the soap opera of the 737. They're buying 19 of the 737-700 models, which isn't the most recent one before the MAX, but they're fairly new planes. They're going to get those in December.
Now, for people who understand this, they don't think it's a big deal to buy some used planes, but as consumers hear about it, you know, United's on the market for used planes. It just, even though it is safe, it may not sound safe.
Well, these are good planes, and you know, the 737 next gen models really have been workhorses of aviation, and they're going to spend a few months likely refurbishing the planes, getting them looking good. But United's kind of sending a statement here that we want to grow, and they just had a really good earnings report. They're planning on adding a lot more seats. And boy, with the 737 backlog, the MAX, they're going to have to take a different track here. So they're spending some money to make this happen.
So, Joe, how much could the buying of the used aircraft help United when it comes to capacity?
You know, it's really important. They actually only have a handful of the MAX planes in their fleet, but they have 137 on order. So they really are going to rely on the MAX to grow the airline. And, you know, the market's really strong now. This year has just been remarkable. Their revenue was up 6%. They're looking at strong late summer bookings. And there's not any sign that even with the economy slowing down, the consumer spending on air travel is declining. And so they kind of defied Wall Street and really grew and has paid off for them.
Are they are other airlines likely to follow United's footsteps when it comes to purchases like this, or is United following others already?
Well, this is kind of a best case for Boeing because they're sticking with the 737, and you know, everybody's nervous that airlines are going to start placing big orders with Airbus, especially the A320 plane. And they had a really good Paris Air Show, selling lots of units, but it hasn't evolved into a full-scale market share loss crisis for Boeing yet. But everybody's watching that carefully, since that's likely Plan B for some airlines is to look to Europe for their planes.
Joe Schwederman, always good to have you with us. He's Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul. Up next, Google looking at a major expansion in the West Loop.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Tech giant Google is considering doubling its office space in Chicago's Fulton Market neighborhood. We are joined by Danny Eckerd, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Danny, why does Google find Chicago so attractive?
Well, for the same reason that a lot of Bay Area-based tech companies are ramping up their hiring in Chicago, which is that there's a pretty decent-sized pool of talent in the city, Midwest engineering talent especially, that is far easier to recruit and far more affordable than on the coast and easier to retain. And so that's why we're starting to see Google and a lot of different tech companies, Facebook, Salesforce, Glassdoor, all some recent names that have been boosting their office presence and hiring presence here because they see the talent here to bring on.
And what kind of jobs would Google likely offer with an expansion like this? It's been largely on the sales side so far, but could that change?
Yeah, so it's kind of unknown exactly what departments they'd be hiring for, but it sounds like it's mostly engineers. You know, that's something that has kind of been a hallmark for a lot of these tech companies I mentioned. That, you know, they've started in Chicago with a lot of sales staff. Obviously, Chicago is a really big B2B market. You know, so many companies based here, and so having sales staff here is a big advantage. But you know, these companies are now realizing that, you know, a lot of Big Ten universities that produce some pretty talented engineers that maybe don't want to deal with the cost of living on the coast and have some great options here closer to home, that they can hire them here, ramp up their offices here, and those are the types of jobs that they like to bring on. So it looks like Google's going to be doing that the next few years again in Fulton Market.
So this is good for, I guess, the psychology of the city, as we lost Amazon, and some people were pretty upset about that and hurt by that. But it is showing that there is a really vibrant tech sector here in town.
Oh, absolutely. And to be honest, you know, Amazon is going to ramp up here most likely as well. I mean, I think you're going to probably see a lot of different big tech companies that need a bunch of offices around the country. And There's a lot of talent to go around. They need outposts, and whether or not it's an HQ2 Amazon type of scale, that's one thing. But, you know, Chicago has really grown its reputation as a tech hub, again, just mostly for the talent and the affordability factors that are here. And, you know, that's something that the city takes a lot of pride in and has been a big impact on the office sector downtown. Think about the Fulton Market District and its growth. So many, you know, cutting-edge tech companies that are scaling there and all around downtown. It's just been a big demand driver for the city.
Thanks so much, Danny Ecker, a reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Quite a transformation in Fulton Market. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday. Young adults are increasingly turning to their parents for money.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are sluggish today. We'll see what's weighing on the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday. More parents of children in their 20s find themselves helping out financially while assisting their own parents.
People in credit card debt are outspending debt-free households when it comes to discretionary income.
The Chicago area set to be hit by several days of dangerous heat.
And the House is expected to vote today on articles of impeachment against President Trump.
On Wall Street, the Dow down 46. The NASDAQ is down 5, S&P is down 8, and oil today is down more than 1.5%.
AccuWeather says an excessive heat watch from noon tomorrow through 7 p.m. Saturday. This afternoon, though, times of clouds and sunshine, rather hot and humid, high near 90, but much cooler at the lakefront, 87 degrees at O'Hare and 80 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Markets are lower this hour. We are joined by Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management, and Fox News business contributor. And Gary, first, give us an idea of what your take is of what you're seeing on the markets today.
Hate to bore you to death, but it's a mixed bag of nothingness today, except there's some earnings movers that are really sticking out. The transports are getting killed. CSX not only had bad numbers, but talked about the industry. So you have things like Norfolk Southern down $13. And as I said, the transport's down more than 3%. That is not thrilling. The transports have lagged the whole market for quite a while, and that's something to watch very closely.
Well, that I was going to ask you about CSX, which posted weaker than forecast quarterly results. How concerned should we be with this, because this is such a big leading indicator?
For markets, you know, when the transports are cracking to the downside, it's probably not a real good thing to see. I have been telling everybody to underweight this group for the better part of a year now, because they just have been lagging, and, you know, they tried to do better the last couple of days, but today really sticks a fork in them pretty decently, and again, I would just avoid them. When CSX announces sales growth down 1% and sees things softening from here, that's why you're seeing other stocks in the group get hit, and just you need to just avoid them at this juncture.
What about Bank of America, also earnings reporting?
You know, a bunch of banks have now reported, and they're really not moving that much. So they came in pretty much expected numbers, a little bit better than expected. But they're pretty much, you know, marking time in here. The good news is they're not hurting the market. The bad news is they're not really helping the market. And the regional banks have been really weak based on the fact that interest rates have come down markedly. We're at 2.066 on the 10-year, and that's actually up from where we were recently. So I think they're just average stocks right now, and not thrilled that much with them.
So when it comes to the wider bank stocks, you say it's kind of in line with what people are expecting. When a lower interest rate environment, you're seeing less trading revenue from some of these banks. Are banks really an area investors should be looking at?
I just don't think right now. You get some good dividends in some names, but if you're looking for appreciation, I'm a big believer in the leading stocks and the leading groups. That's where the strength is. And the financials are just not a strong group right now. And again, when you have the 10-year go from 3.25 down to 2, that's their margins getting squeezed. And I think that's what we're reflecting here. And again, I just think, you know, if you want to own a little bit of these, some names, fine, but don't overweight them at all.
Netflix, IBM, eBay, all scheduled to report after the close today. Anything in particular that, Gary, we should keep an eye out for?
Well, Netflix will be about the beta. In other words, if Netflix really gaps up on earnings, that'll help the high beta stocks. If it does the opposite, that'll be another story. IBM is something I haven't watched in a long time because there's no sales growth there. Their sales have been going down just about every quarter for the last 3 years. That's been pretty much a lagging stock. For me, I'm going to be watching a lot of these software names that have been strong. I think Amazon's going to be real important. Facebook's going to be real important. Apple, without a doubt, will be important. And then I must tell you, watch Boeing also. The stock's been hit because of the airline issue. I want to see how that reacts, too, because it's an important stock in the Dow. Those are the names I'm watching right now when earnings come out.
Now, interesting. From an investment standpoint, when you think of Boeing, you'd say such a large, robust company. They have been hit. Is that something to maybe look at buying, considering they're conceivably going to come out of this?
I think that when all said and done, the stock is much higher, if we don't go into a big recession, of course, and that you can't predict. I think that they will get past this. The problem is we do not know how long it's going to take, and pretty much every day the last few weeks we've been hearing about it's going to take longer and longer before they get these jets flying again. So for me, I'm not a big believer in betting on the unknown, so I sit back and watch. The stock's got real strong support, it looks like, in this 350, 360 area. It's 366. I want to see how the earnings come out, whether the market reacts well to them before I'm thinking about jumping. And I think they report in the next week.
So what do you do with its pivot here, China and trade? One day we're close to a deal. The next day we're not even anywhere close to a deal. It's been dragging on a lot longer than a lot of people thought. What do you do as an investor? I mean, how do you even handle this?
I feel like we're watching Brexit. Brexit's 3 years, and this one I think is now 15 months now. I'm tending to not listen to anything that's coming out of the mouths on trade because, it changes 15 minutes later. I have been underweight Chinese ADRs. The one I always watch closely is Alibaba, BABA, and that stock's been underperforming also. But if things ever get going, I want to jump all over that name. I just don't see the sizzle yet in the group, but for me, that's my favorite, but not this second.
Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. His website is GaryK.com. Up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, a group of Americans is facing money pressure from the generation after them and sometimes the one before.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon we're discussing the financial challenges faced by people with children in their 20s and 30s who also have living parents. To talk about it, Craig Bolanos is joining us, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, this is what they're calling the sandwich generation, because they are. They're taking care of their parents, and their kids, who may even be working, are still in need of financial support.
Oh, yeah, and the sandwich, that whole metaphor is so incredibly true, because we have these stressors on both sides of the equation, as you mentioned. It's not just the kids that haven't yet launched fully into their careers, haven't yet achieved financial independence. It's the issue that we're having to financially support our parents as well as they go through the aging process.
A lot of times people look down on the younger workers. They almost see them as slackers, freeloaders, that sort of thing. That's not necessarily what's going on, though. I mean, sometimes it's out of necessity that they're leaning on mom and dad.
No, I think it is a necessity, because there has been such a stark societal change. What I talk about all the time is today's 25 to 27-year-old is so different than yesteryear of the same age. And a big part of that, of course, is something we've talked about on the Noon Business Hours before. It's the crushing amount of student debt that has hampered the adult children from launching into financial independence quickly. And that's where the big disparity is. you've got mom and dad, study after study, saying the kids should be fully independent by the time they're 25, yet you have the same study showing that the millennials believe they shouldn't reach full independence until the age of 30, and that creates a communication barrier.
So why did it work in decades past where you told your kid at, you know, when they graduated college, okay, you're out on your own, go out? What has changed? I mean, the recession, we saw a lot of kids who were moving home because the jobs weren't there, but that hasn't been the case. I mean, we've seen the jobs come back. We even had reports this week that people were leaving jobs for other jobs, which is a good sign. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Jennifer, you're absolutely right. The jobs market, I mean, this is the single greatest unemployment number that we have had in decades. But there's also a change. One of the changes that's occurred is we've had this shift since the Great Recession, where there's a lot of people working, but there's a lot more people working in what I call the gig economy. They're working as freelancers, they're working as contractors, they're doing these different things, and they don't necessarily have the same stability of the robust package from a big company relative to their health care, relative to their retirement, and relative to the consistency of a paycheck. So when you take that changing landscape of how people are working, combined with the heavy student debt load, it's really become the problem that we were just discussing.
What about socially? What about dating and telling someone that you're still living with your parents? Is there no shame in the game these days? Because back in the day...
Oh, come on. It's relative, Jennifer. I love how you brought that up. You know, these studies continually show that there are people that show some shame, but the reality is it's kind of becoming indoctrinated into the culture. And I think the thing which, again, is breaking down communication is you have so many parents that are walking a fine line. They're not just helping. A lot of parents are enabling, because I don't know that you should be paying your adult child's cell phone bill, auto insurance, helping out with the rent, while that same child is traveling better than you are with friends and other people, which you see then posted on social media.
That is Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer, Wealth Management Group. And thank you so much for joining us. Also, join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, revealing numbers on credit card debt in America.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
People in credit card debt are compounding the problem, according to a survey by creditcards.com. Let's learn more from Ted Rossman, industry analyst, creditcards.com. Welcome, Ted. And tell us, what kind of debt are people carrying these days? What are some of the big things that they're buying?
We found that households with credit card debt are outspending debt-free households in 7 of the 9 discretionary spending categories that we asked about. So we're talking about things like restaurant meals, clothes, cell phones, entertainment, gym memberships. There's a lot of money, and it's really important to pay this down because the average credit card rate is a record high. It's almost 18%.
So it sounds like they're not saving much of anything these days.
Unfortunately not, and that's the thing. I really encourage people to think of it in these terms. Would you have bought that same car or plane ticket or restaurant meal if it cost 18% more? Because that's what credit card debt is doing to you.
And is that something that, I mean, sometimes it's an impulse buy, sometimes it's a necessity, but those interest charges and just how much all that adds up, is that something that maybe isn't as widely understood by people who are taking on more of this debt?
I agree. I think there's a lot of lifestyle creep that goes on, because we followed up by asking, well, in which of these categories would you be willing to cut back? And in all 9 cases, fewer than half of U.S. adults said that they would cut back significantly. That's a problem if you're in debt and you're still spending so much and you're not willing to cut back. Something's got to give. You've got to either raise your income, cut your expenses, or do something like a balance transfer card. It's just not sustainable to pay 18% interest over the long haul.
And that's the consumption mentality, right? It's sort of, I want it. I'm not going to save for it. I'm not going to wait for it. Whatever it is, whether it's a trip or a meal or clothes or anything, I want it right now.
And just to be clear, I'm not a big fan of the whole latte shaming thing about, oh, you're in debt because you bought a $5 coffee. I think it's about the big stuff. And this study really drilled into the big stuff. We're talking monthly car payments of $425. You might need a car, but you don't need a really expensive brand new car. Vacations, that's another one. The average family with credit card debt spending about $2,200 a year on vacation, that really neatly correlates with the median credit card debt, according to the Fed. You skip one vacation, you might be debt-free. That's a big deal.
So what do you do, or what do you recommend for those who are in debt, and where do they even begin to try to get out of this?
I think it's important to cut back on big categories. So I'm not saying you can't have any fun, but look for things that you're not taking advantage of. Monthly subscriptions you're paying for, or a really hefty new car payment. These are things you could cut back on. Maybe drive a cheaper used car instead. I also like balance transfer credit cards. You could pay no interest for up to 21 months.
Always good information. Thank you so much for joining us. That is Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. If you missed any portion of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the radio.com app.